You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo.
Well, thanks for joining us on episode 30 of the Reinvest Podcast, where Seth and I get to show you how to maximize your life through the power of real estate investing. I was thinking today, actually, we need to do an episode on the harsh realities of real estate investing.
Yeah, as we were talking about, that's slow grind sometimes. It's not peppy and fast as we would sometimes want it to be.
Right. I mean, like the stock market, I think, is appealing because you hear these stories of people who made these overnight massive gains on their, you know, their capital investment. But for all the reasons that you love real estate, it's also the stability. And with the stability comes kind of that slow build, get the foundations right. But everyone
would have loved to be in on GameStop before it had its rise, rise from the ashes. But
you know that it's Back to the Future. We talked about this the other day in the car, where Biff finds the sports betting magazine, and then he went back in time,
made a bunch of money.
I have daydreamed multiple times about how I would.
It's just not that easy. That's also dishonest. So he's cheating. So that's anyway, fair. We got a great episode planned today. Today we have joining us a former aerospace mechanical engineer, Flint. Flint, how you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on, fellas.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to have you. So we met Flint, well, originally last year at Best Ever in 2022, and then we kind of had a chance to really catch up with him and get to know him a little bit more this year at Best Ever Conference 2023. So he graciously agreed to spend some time with us here on the podcast. So it's good to have you here with us today.
What a conversation starter, too. Like, hey, name's Flint, aerospace engineer. I designed the wings on the 787 Dreamliner, you know. that's a good way to flex on somebody early on in a conversation.
It's funny. I'd like to say I don't use it ever, but to be honest, if you get on my LinkedIn, that is my header. I have, you know, mechanical engineer, designed the wing on 787. So maybe I pump it a lot.
Now, because you appeal to other engineers, that's kind of like a resume in the engineering world, right? Like to the scope of the projects that you've worked on.
it builds that credibility and says that I've been through the grind. I've done it. I get it. We speak the same language.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome, man. Aerospace engineering.
It wouldn't be as impressive if it was like the wheel on like the little tyke roller thing. You know what I mean? It just sounds really technical. So, I mean, I'm sure it does boost credibility. So, Flint, when we were talking at Best Ever, you told us that you just got back from a trip. Maybe tell us where you were and how that went.
Are you alluding to Antarctica?
I am.
Okay.
I've done so many trips, I don't know which one you're talking about.
I have been to all seven continents, which is also in my bio because it is a good conversation starter.
Yeah, that's incredible.
To be honest, it's actually my wife. She works down there. She's out of all things, she's an HR manager.
In
but
Antarctica.
When you have a force of 1,200 to 1,400 people on three different stations down there, you need a full suite of leadership and management. But rewinding back 10 years or so at this point, we both did tour down there as tourists in Antarctica. We slept outside with the penguins and bivy sacks. We kayaked. Yeah, that's great.
Well, usually when you're like, my wife works down there, you're talking about like down in Colorado, maybe down in Texas, maybe down in Mexico, but literally down there on the bottom of the world.
Yeah. She doesn't work there full time, but when she has to travel there, she's gone for months to 2 months at a time. And actually, wow, she just texted me the other night while she was downstairs working. Hey, I need to go to Palmer Station in April. Are you okay with that? And, you know, that immediately means she's gone for a month and I got the kids, wow, the 4 and 6 year old.
Oh, man.
Two kiddos. Nice.
Two kids.
Yeah, well, you freaked me out because when we were talking in the lobby networking together, you told me that she was kayaking with like orcas and stuff. And I kind of like jumped into my nerd mode and I was like, hey, man, you shouldn't do that. Those things are like predatory animals. So, but
no, they're totally good. I've done it too. I actually had a dedicated, I mean, we can go down this rabbit hole, but up in Vancouver, off of Vancouver Island, you can go kayaking with orcas for a week long, and you're out in remote middle of nowhere. Just
if you make it
kayaking
that long.
So put it on your list of things to do.
Yeah, no, you definitely spurred me on to have some goals that way. But hey, just on best ever, before we jump into the main meat of the episode today, what were some of the big takeaways for you from the sessions, from the other syndicators and investors there that week?
Yeah, it's funny. I only sat through, I think, three sessions. The rest of the time, I'm just, you could call it distracted by squirrels out in the hall, because I just feel like at this point, 3 years in networking, I know so many people, and it's catching up with all those people. It's building those partnerships and those relationships even more, meeting new people. I mean, that was really my primary goal, was to go meet potential new partners. Because as a capital raiser myself, I partner with those experienced operators. This is my little pitch to the passive investors, but if the only operator you know is the Dallas-Fort Worth Class B value-add operator, that's the only investment you get, is the Class B Dallas-Fort Worth value-add. So I can bring investors to those because they are their niche and they're the experts in the market. But if you want more beyond that, I can partner with self-storage and build-to-rent, which is what I'm doing now as well, in multifamily in other states.
You're kind of like a broker. You have this large pool of experienced operators that you've vetted and built a relationship with, and you give that network access to, you give your network access to them.
Yeah. I got to play that careful though, because the SEC views broker dealers, it's a license and they get commission. I don't play that middleman game. And that's actually a good clarity here, is I don't play the middleman where I just find somebody for investors. I actually have to play a role when I partner with these teams.
We just, Kathy Fetke, I think, put an episode out there distinguishing between a joint venture and a syndication. And it was actually new to me, that information of you don't really get to choose what you are. The SEC defines what your partnership is and what bucket it falls into.
It was kind of talking about it was talking about some people think they're maybe structuring a joint venture, when it's actually, in the eyes of the government and SEC, it's actually a syndication, because maybe the other partners are passive and have no role within the entity and stuff like that. So it was kind of like, hey, you got to be careful how you're structuring. Even if you think on paper you wrote down, hey, we're doing a syndication, you know, that might not be what it is. So it was kind of an interesting point to bring up that we had not heard a lot about up until that point. So
yeah, it's true. When you get into the lesser number of people, if you have several investors who are totally passive, they just bring money. Yeah, the SEC is not going to want to see a JV on that. But I'm not the expert, and that's why we all hire SEC attorneys.
Right. So find one. That's our disclaimer for the show.
Yeah.
Well, hey, jumping in here, catch us up. Take us from, you know, aerospace engineering, and what initially captured and piqued your interest in real estate investing, and what did that transition look like for you?
Yeah. I got a wild hair back in 2016-17 timeframe. I was like, you know what? I suck at the stock market. I got to figure this out. And I started trying to educate myself. And the more and more I dug, the more I realized how I don't even want to play that game. And to me, it's driven by emotion more than valuation. And the classic example here is, most recently, Elon bought Twitter and Tesla stock tanks because he bought Twitter. It's not overnight that the net operating income, the revenue potential of Tesla went down. It's an emotional driven thing. And I had always known that there was these magical unicorns out there that owned lots of real estate and didn't have to work a day in their life because they had so much passive income. And I was like, you know what? Maybe that's a path. And so I started digesting Bigger Pockets podcast. And I could say the rest is history. It's a very long path from there. I bird a property, bought my first duplex for $80,000. It was heavily distressed up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Wow.
Yeah, I got a hard money loan. There's a whole story. You guys were talking earlier about, you know, the horror stories to real estate. I got one. To be honest, I made money. There is a horror story too, but I made money on the deal. I held it. I sold it last year, last April, before the market turned.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Serendipitously, I didn't plan it that way. And it just.
Yeah, you got blessed by the market gods.
So save the painful part of that story for our smaller pockets segment when we really dive deep into a painful story, and you can extrapolate that for us. But keep going. That's really, you took that full cycle.
Yeah. So as soon as I got done with that burr, which is painful in and of itself, right? You're essentially flipping. Mm-hmm. And I did it remotely. I live in Denver. This was in Milwaukee. They told me, hey, GC has said, hey, it's going to cost this much. It'll be 3 months. We'll be done. No, it costs 30% more and it took twice as long. Mm. And then in the end, I couldn't cash out refi. That's the whole point of the burr strategy, is to get that extra equity and cash out and then go buy another one. Well, no, the amount I put into the property ended up being the valuation of the property. So there was no buffer there to get a cash out.
Wow.
It cash flowed healthy. What I remember Bigger Pockets saying back in the day was the average is $200 a month per door. Mm-hmm. I was getting $300 per month. So I was like, oh, damn, I'm doing good. Two doors, getting $600 per month. But that whole goal of how do I get to retire early on passive income?
Right.
I would need to do 50 more doors at least.
Right.
I was like, well, that was a ton of capital, a ton of effort, and it wasn't that great. And to do it 50 more times is going to take me to retirement just to get there.
Didn't it feel very scalable, huh?
Yeah. So, came across another podcast. It was all about syndications, and then I was hooked from there. Then I started listening to a syndication podcast and finally dove in. At some point, 2019, 2020, I started educating myself, getting coaches. And then I started partnering. That's when you network at conferences. And from there, I'm at like 1,500 plus units.
Wow. So just, and if you're listening, please go back to that progression. You started with podcasts, and what I heard you say is listen to the Reinvest podcast, and that's the only one that you're going to need for all your real estate investing needs. No. But you found a podcast that met kind of the interest level and where you were in that investment journey. And then what was the first conference that you went to really network and put yourself out there?
So I went to Dealmaker Live, and that was... It was good. To be honest, I have a lot of friends from that first time that I went to that conference. Subsequently, we all meet each other now at Best Ever.
Nice. Everybody's kind of now made that their conference of choice, huh?
Yeah.
That's funny. So talk about the first partnership that you had.
Second failure story. The first partnership was a syndication we tried to do here outside of Denver. It was a 23 unit, $2.3 million. Everything went wrong on that one. The number one thing was we couldn't raise capital. Mm. And that's where I'll keep it at that. The other big thing, without saying too much, our property manager, the one we got, they were fully integrated with GCs. So they could go in. They were used to doing, small multis like fourplexes. They had a whole bunch of homes that they did fix and holds for their customers. And so this 23 unit was, yes, it was a step up, but they're excited to do it. And we're like, okay, well, maybe you guys can grow with us. And then they ghosted us 2 weeks before closing.
Whoa.
Don't know why. They just stopped communicating. There was no hint or inkling of something they didn't like. So yeah. Anyway, money went hard. We ended up having to back out. I lost all the earnest money out of the partnership. I was the only one that had enough liquidity to put down $30,000. So
that was all on you?
I got my $30,000 mentorship because I never actually paid for one of those, but I got it through the school of hard knocks.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lesson. So what was the takeaway from that? I mean, do you feel like it was just because of learning pains and inexperience and maybe partnered with the wrong person? Or do you feel like it was kind of some stuff outside your control?
Yeah, all of the above, to be honest. the partners, the even the lender or KP, there was just things weren't coming together the way they probably should have. But really the key was if we could have raised the capital, we could have made it survive. And I think that was the number one crux. And our problem was we went in with the mentality of if we build it, they will come. And mm-hmm. we figured it was a small raise. It was going to be $1 million raise. I mean, it was a heavy lift. So we had to have a lot of CapEx. But yeah, the investors didn't come. And so that's when I immediately flipped. And this is an action to others out there. Find your weak point and go get coaching for it, or go get a partner who's good at that. So I immediately went to figure out how do I capital raise better.
Now, did you do that through, was that one of the coaching services that you sought out was in the area of raising capital?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Who was that through?
That was with Good Egg, the real estate accelerator. Okay. Julie and Annie.
Yeah. Awesome. And how, I mean, do you feel like you came out on the other side of that more proficient in actually raising capital?
So we'll give you guys a time frame. I think this was August of 21 that deal failed. By November, I switch gears, right? I'm now trying to figure out how to raise capital. I get all of my systems in place. And through my network, I get invited on to raise capital in November of 21. So just a few months later, I get invited on. And this helped with my investor base because now I'm bringing investors to an experienced partner that I'm going to co-GP with. So we kicked it off from there. And I think that property ended up closing early February. And that was my first
Wow. Day. Yeah. So literally August, coaching, November, you're in a deal. That's a quick turnaround.
Yeah.
So when you partner for the first time, and this is really what I want to get into today, is playing to your strengths so that you can move faster and farther. I think people come to the real estate investing scene and maybe they are only exposed to a small slice of the pie and they think that is real estate investing. That's what it means to be an investor. Kind of like when you're like, hey, I want to be a strong, I want to be a leader. Well, then you think that's being an A-type leader. Well, there's all types of leadership out there and leadership styles. And the same is true in real estate investing. There's different seats on the bus, different roles that you can fill. So was your first partnership, the obligation that you have was to bring the capital, or did you have other responsibilities in that one?
Yeah. So I played an asset management role on the back end after closing. We were trying to actually build a dedicated office for the property management so that we could remove them from an apartment, right? And then we gained that apartment. So I did a whole bunch of legwork to figure out how we're going to get it. Is it going to be modular? Are we going to do stick build? And that's at that point, the economy started turning and the wood prices skyrocketed and we're just like, okay, never mind. But so I did a healthy amount of work there. And then I do investor relations for my folks.
So when you sought out the coaching with Good Egg to raise capital, because that was something that you had struggled with through that deal, it kind of birthed now what your whole business model is around, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And as an engineer, I never expected myself to be a capital raiser. To me, I can do spreadsheets day in, day out. For underwriting, the due diligence, inspections, the detail orientation, all the asset management I could do. But I ended up, syndications with the capital raising and partnering with other people. This is where, like I said, my pitch earlier, I can bring a unique set of other asset classes to my investors because, to be honest, that's what I want. I'm seeking asset classes that really appeal to me. Because they have different return profiles in different areas. So I'm diversifying myself and I'm bringing investors with me.
And we call that investor alignment because you're seeking out different types of investments. You're already going there. You might as well take people with you. And if those people want to go to the same place that you're going, that alignment happens. And that's a lot of fun. That's when it gets fun.
Yeah, exactly.
So explain, I guess, to our audience, what are some practical ways that you lean on your engineering background? And how does that come over into your real estate investing business?
I this is a good and bad thing. Analysis paralysis. So super detail oriented. The other thing is, so I was a program manager the last 6 years, and I managed a large team, 50 plus people to modify aircraft. It's a hugely complex program. And to manage that many people, I mean, not only am I now in charge of the finances, the budget, I think all of that management style and being on the business side just totally translates easily to the real estate side.
Mm-hmm. The complexity of a real estate transaction doesn't overwhelm you because you've already been integrated to, and your job, right, necessitated that you handle the finances and the people and the action items of performing on a schedule for stuff.
Yep. Performing on schedules, performing on budgets. Yeah, absolutely.
And then you had an investment, and really your network then were other engineers. Were a lot of those engineers already exposed to real estate investing, or did you bring something new to them?
You know, it's a mixed bag. The engineers, so engineers as an avatar, they analysis paralysis and they're skeptical. So they're
that's
hard
a tough
convert.
Demographic to appeal to.
It is very tough. Yeah. But it takes time, and I've put in a lot of time at this point, and they just see me and they see the growth and where I'm going from where I started. And it's the skepticism starts going away, right? It's not this pyramid scheme or.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. You've actually been there. You know, you're actually doing it. You're already doing what you're asking them to do and what you're presenting to them. And it's not like, it's not like it's some sort of, you know, untested waters. And you even did some extra hard steps and, you know, even with the burr in the beginning and some of the nitty gritty that other people maybe want to get involved with, and really learn some of those hard lessons. So,
yeah, they can leapfrog from, that's what I tell people when they're just thinking about single family, cause that's where a lot of people start. And that's the only thing they know. I was actually at a meetup last night and I said, you know, you don't have to do that. Do you find it being a job buying that single family home? They're like, yeah, gosh, so much work. Yeah, there is a better way.
Yeah,
maybe for you, there could be a better way. Let me show you the light.
Well, and I think, again, going back to the different roles, you know, everybody, they think they want, well, everybody wants to get the best returns they can. Okay, so then naturally they gravitate towards what allows them to create the most upside, which is typically going to be the most hands-on portion of a real estate transaction. And then, but that may not really be what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes educating somebody, you know, hey, well, what does that look like? Tell me about your goals. You know, do you have a lot of time on your hands that you can peel off in the weekends and evenings? Well, no, I have a family and I work 60 hours a week and I make good money. Okay, well, let's talk about that a little more. Maybe that isn't really what you want. But what if you could earn, you know, 10%, you know, to 15% on your investment, not have to do anything and get the tax depreciation to offset your income? Okay, hey, that sounds really good to me. Well, let me tell you what that looks like. So I'm sure you've probably had to educate people that maybe they really are more of a passive investor when they thought they were active.
Yep. Yep. And you're absolutely right. Those conversations go immediately to their goals. What are you looking for? Because a lot of people, they might say, oh, I just want a lot of cash flow. Well, do you need the cash flow? Because when you get into these deals, the cash flow doesn't start out that good. It gets better towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
Different asset classes perform differently, like self-storage cash flow is better. You can get into to build to rent, new development, where you double your money in shorter periods of time. And then they're starting like, oh, yeah, well, if I don't need that money, well, are you going for legacy wealth to build your net worth as fast as possible so that when you want to retire, you can now live on cash flow that thing can provide? So it definitely brings in this new aha moment of, you mean there's choices? There's choices in the stock market, but there's not choices in cash flow. You're just like, I'm just hoping this one performs better than the other.
Right. Right. No, that's good, man. And so what are your thoughts on somebody trying to wear every hat versus like the stay in your lane mentality?
I I could go both ways on this. I think there's a healthy balance. You always have to have checks and balances no matter what. So staying in your own lane, putting on your blinders is not healthy for relationships and partnerships. Mm. But also you need to be careful you're not stepping on other people's toes, because you can create duplicative work.
Are you saying it might not be healthy because it kind of breeds a lack of accountability? And it's good to kind of be able to check up on each other and kind of, you kind of know what the other person should be doing so that if they weren't doing it, you could see that the ball was being dropped or.
Yeah. I mean, you got to know what the other team members are doing, and you got to know, cause not all teams perform, not all team members may perform well, and some partnerships fall apart. And so you absolutely need to be well aware of how everything works. You need to be an expert in your lane, be aware of what other people are doing. If someone's slacking or someone wants to go on vacation, you still have to be able to perform that role. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where the healthy balance comes in. And once again, great communication. Hey, I'm sick, really sick. You guys, can you take over asset management? We got things to do this week and I'm not available.
Sounds right? like you're describing marriage, my marriage.
Yes.
That's good stuff. Real quick, when we were talking at Best Ever in the hallway, when we weren't in the session because you were the distracted squirrel kind of scenario there, you were talking about the psychological struggle of going full time as a yes. co-GP, raising money, you know, with investors to plug into these deals. I think a lot of people, they either are at that juncture or want to be at that juncture mm-hmm. of I'm walking away from the corporate world. I'm walking away from my W-2 and I'm now doing this full time. Super empowering moment. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Fear and excitement mingled together. So
yes, absolutely.
Talk about that for people. How did you know it was the right time and what was going through your head when you were doing that?
So at the beginning of 2022, I put on my whiteboard, I'm going to quit in November of 22. That was right after I did my first deal, but I'm like, you know what? We're going to skyrocket. Back then the economy was doing well and deals were flowing. That didn't stop me though. We did a fund to fund, that year. I got onto built to rent stuff, but the thing that really converted me was I got a high performance coach. Everything's all about mindset and being able to manage yourself. When you're not in corporate America and there's systems in place and people around you, and you're jumping out on your own. It's oddly, I'm still struggling with this, managing myself. So yeah. I knew I needed a high performance coach to help me get my mindset straight and to keep myself guided. And he straight up said, so this is where everybody's situation is different. My wife makes good money. If I quit, could we survive on her income? I was like, yes. So, and then he's like, so if you, let's say you're only 50% successful at the end of this year, after you've quit your job, worst case scenario, you could either, could you go find another job? I was like, yeah, I could go find another job. But would you, if you're only 50% successful? And I was like, no, if I'm 50% successful, I'm still good to go. Let's go.
Right. Yeah.
Then he says, right. So he's not telling me the answer. He's guiding me to the solution. Right. And this is what good coaches do. And then he said, Flint, you've been doing this for 2.5 years, nights and weekends. You were burnout, right? I said, yeah, I'm absolutely burnout. Is it sustainable? I was like, no, it hasn't been sustainable for a long time. And then he was just silent, right? He's like, I just came to my own conclusions with his questions.
Wow. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Yeah.
But you did drink.
I did.
But there was the aha moment of like, man, if I'm 50% successful, I would keep moving in the direction and do this full time. And then you probably were like, I'm going to bet on myself. I can be 50% successful this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. The other thing, there's a quote I heard. It's people quit when they're 80% of the way there to success.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, you never know when you're 80%.
Yeah.
But you're like, if I quit now, I know I was 80%. So, and the thing is, I don't know if I'm 80%, what, I'm still moving forward. I'm still raising capital. I'm still getting on partnerships. So yeah, things are good.
So then tell me, now that you've been on the back end of this, okay, you made the jump, you know, you put your notice in, you quit your job. What kind of shifts have you seen in your purpose, your drive, your mindset now that you're quote unquote full time?
I am getting more sleep, so I'm happier. I've to be honest, I've been working on the mindset thing for a while, and it's kind of this bubble we live in the syndication world breeds this abundance mindset, and everyone's there. I mean, technically we're all competitors trying to fight for the same assets, but no one really cares when you go to these conferences. We're all friends and we're all here to help each other. And to me, that has changed me from a more optimistic person than I've been a pessimistic person. And my wife even says it's been noticeable. So
wow,
things are improving. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
We're going to, kind of move on to our smaller pocket segment. So this is the part of the show where you go ahead and divulge your deepest, darkest, worst deal, and how that went for you, and most importantly, what did you learn from it so that our investors can glean from your failure and avoid the same mistake?
We kind of dove into the first syndication failure. Let's go back to the burr, because this story is good. I never wanted to hang this story on my wall or on my fridge, but man, it makes for good bar talk. So, finish the burr. We get someone renting the duplex. It's a lower unit, upper unit. Both are 3-bed, 1-bath, and one tenant takes over. She's going to live up top, and her elderly aunts are going to live on the lower, and she's just going to be the caretaker. Oh. So we're good to go. I think she was getting government assistance and whatnot, whatever. The property manager had it all handled, and things were good. She was paying the whole way through for between January of 2019 up until January of 22. All through COVID, everything was good. All of a sudden, wow, Randomly, January 22, she stops paying. Like, well, I kind of thought about selling, so maybe I'll sell, even though in the back end we're working on getting her government assistance. But through that process, the property manager starts digging a little more, and they're like, and she starts freaking out. Oh, I have my two elderly uncles living on the first floor.
How many people are in this property?
I was like, I thought it was her aunts. So let's dig a little further. Anyway, we're helping her fill out the paperwork for government assistance. I'm going to get my back pay. I'm not concerned too much. I get a realtor. The realtor shows up to the property with very little notice. Like, the property management will give just so much notice. She has the ability to hide things. My realtor shows up almost like with hours of notice, and she sees a sign on the lawn that says, sunshine, Alzheimer's patient care or something. She's running basically geriatric Alzheimer's care facility out of my duplex.
What?
So not only is she doing some arbitrage thing, which just breaks the loan or the lease, I all of a sudden realize how much exposure I have from a liability standpoint. Oh, she's not only running a commercial operation, but there's these Alzheimer's patients, geriatric Alzheimer's patients. My realtor gets in the door, starts walking around, finds 2 beds per bedroom. So she can fit 6 people in this tiny little, I think it was 800 square feet.
Oh my gosh.
And she has hired caretakers taking care of these people. So she's driving around. And, go ahead.
Was your property manager just hiding this from you or lying to you, or?
That is a great question that I don't have an answer to. I alluded to, I was like, I think you guys are in on this, because for 3 years. So lesson learned, I'll get to the lesson learned on this right now. Visit your property. Don't trust your property manager. I mean,
wow.
I got lazy because I was just getting rents. Everything was getting paid. So she found out I was selling. We found out what she was doing. She broke terms of the lease. My real estate agent was awesome. We didn't even get it listed. She knew a whole bunch of real estate investors up in that area. She went and just called all these investors. Someone else just bid at it. They took the offering price. There was no negotiation. Within a week, it was like we were done and the deal was done. It was all bought in cash. So it was basically from when we just started and discovered it and one and done, it was like 2.5 weeks later.
Wow.
So I was like, cool, done. We were totally transparent with the new buyer. He knew what he was getting into. Her lease was, well, she broke her lease, so maybe it didn't matter, but her lease was ending a couple months later. Now this is where it gets good.
Wait, what?
This happened. So she ended up not paying her caretakers. And I got a text a week later after the closing that said something along the lines of her name was Trisha. Trisha is locked up in her house, afraid for her life because her caretaker, she hadn't been paying and she'd been lying to the whole time. I guess she told her caretaker she owned the house and it was all fine. They finally realized she was lying the whole time and they hadn't been getting paid. They were marching outside the property with guns trying to get their pay.
Whoa, that escalated quickly. Holy cow.
Yeah. Dude,
and you were like, I'm so glad I sold this thing.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is the second she found out I was going to sell, she's like, no, let's, can we do a lease to own? I'm like, you stopped paying rent. Why would I do this lease to own? What do you?
So, I mean, there's a part of you that can't be angry and you just kind of have to respect it a little bit, right? I mean, that's a pretty elaborate con.
She pulled it off. It turns out that apparently that's pervasive up in Milwaukee to the point where getting caretaking licenses is really hard and you actually have to go outside the city because that was happening a lot.
Wow.
Oh, here's the thing. She was charging $3,500 per bed.
Oh,
I was charging her for the whole property. Remember, I bought it at $80,000. This is the Class C area. $1,750 for the whole place per month is what I charged her, and she was getting.
She was making bank. Why'd she even stop paying rent and rock the boat?
Yeah, how did she not be able to afford it? Realtor says she was driving around in a really nice Mercedes.
Wait, so, I think we know where the money was then.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow, good story. That was a good one. All right, man, we're going to go into what I call our little nugget. All right, Flint. So what is one practical takeaway or a piece of advice for our listeners that they can implement on their real estate investing businesses?
Always visit your property.
Why would you say that?
So I think the number one thing I always tell people is just take action. If it's small, it doesn't matter. Just take action. Because otherwise you're never going to get anywhere. But I think a lot of the analysis paralysis kicks in. Mm-hmm. If you can't figure it out, find someone that knows it. Go find a book, go find a podcast. There's always a way to take a step forward to get yourself to move forward.
And I think to break down that phrase analysis paralysis, it's more than just I have a deal in front of me. Do I pull the trigger on it? There's a lot of forms of analysis paralysis. It's I want to get started into real estate, but I don't know where to begin. Or I want to approach this person, but I don't know how I'm going to be perceived. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's lots of ways that you kind of get in this paralyzed moment.
Yes.
So coming from a former engineer, I mean, that's probably something that you have to preach to yourself, right? Is take action, take action.
Yes. And then it's self-doubt, constantly self-doubt. I know I'm probably part of the majority on that. When you start jumping into something that's big and scary like this with other people's money, to be honest, getting in with a team of other experts kind of makes it easier because you know you're not the one. You're not if you fail somewhere, make a mistake, you have team members there to help correct you and make sure things are still running.
It is a team sport. You know what I realized at Best Ever? I was sitting in that auditorium and I was kind of looking around at the people that were listening to one of the main sessions, And I was like, you know what? Everybody in here is scared. You know, like everybody has the same thoughts playing through their head of like, man, can we take on a deal bigger than the one we just did? Or, you know, I don't know how to grapple with the uncertainty of the market. Or, hey, can we raise enough money for this next one? How are we going to keep our deal flow going? Like, we're all thinking the same thing, mm-hmm. and we're all insecure. Yeah. Like, man, should I go up to so-and-so and say hi? And it almost helped me because it leveled the playing field. And I would say most people there are upfront about just their transparency to say, hey, we're figuring this out too. You know, there's not too many people that kind of postured themselves as we know it all, but everybody's in the same spot. So, I love that advice. But what's been one of the greatest resources in your real estate investing career?
That's a good question. Cause it depends on the phase. Like I said, podcasts are what got me into it, but I think that the real thing that has accelerated me are my coaches. Mm-hmm. Right now I have a sales coach. So like I said, I used capital raising coaches, and then I found my other weakness is how do I appropriately talk to people? And because maybe I was doing something wrong, or, you know, you just gotta, you gotta keep digging deeper and deeper.
Right. So you don't know what you don't know until someone tells you, and then you're like, oh, it makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, those aha moments for sure.
Yeah.
What were the, just so we can put this in our show notes and just really practical stuff for people, what were the names of your high performance coach, your sales coach, and your capital raising? You said Good Egg was your capital raising coach.
Yeah, Good Egg Investments. They have a real estate accelerator course. They help you set up your website, active campaign, drip campaigns, everything for basically the funnel as leads come in. I'm using Faisal Insan. I just know him as Faisal. I'm sure he has a company name right here. Yeah, Faisal Insan. I can send you guys a link. You can put it in there. Yeah. High performance coach. And then
I think I'm connected with him on Facebook, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think I'm already connected with him. I think he was, I don't know, maybe don't hold me to that, but I think he was connected with Julie Holly somehow.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. That's
how I met him, was actually through Julie.
Okay, cool. Very cool.
A lot of people have probably said that. That's how I met so-and-so through Julie.
Yeah, I know. She's a great networker.
But he works a lot with the syndicators, so you kind of end up in this mastermind with him, with a bunch of people in the same struggles. So it helps.
Good.
And then from a sales coach standpoint, Keely Hubbard, she was at Best Ever Behind the Booth. She does the vineyard syndications.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But her side gig is sales coaching, because in her history, she was VP in marketing, doing sales in corporate America. And then she started doing syndications and built a sales program around it.
So, very cool.
Wow. Yeah. Awesome. We'll put those links in our show notes. And lastly, Flint, how can people follow your success and what your company's doing?
Yeah, if you love engaging with me or want to engage with me, LinkedIn is my number one place. It's LinkedIn/Flint Jamison. And then if you want to see deals or see more about my company, Vestas Capital, you can just go to investwithflint.com and it'll take you to Vestas Capital.
Seriously, website. That was an available URL.
It was.
Nice. And then currently, I mean, are you doing anything else right now besides build to rent stuff?
Yeah, you know, two multifamily deals fell in my lap last week.
Okay,
I'm betting those two.
Awesome.
Hopefully I'll be able to jump on one of them. Yeah, and then I think the build to rent is going to be ongoing for the foreseeable future.
I was peeking around your LinkedIn page. You're putting up some concepts, designs, and stuff for what those homes are going to look like. So if you're curious about build to rent as a concept, go to Flint's LinkedIn page to check that out. So. Well, awesome, man, dude. It's been fun. Thank you so much. I fully anticipate having you on again. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thank you, guys. It's been fun.
As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.